Okay. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Before we get started, I just wanted to remind everybody that all the sessions are now live and they're on the Channel 9 website today. So you can go ahead and go up there, download the slides and the content that's available right now. My name is Cale Hendrickson. I'm a senior program manager on the graphics team at Microsoft. And I'm here to tell you all about the exciting changes that we've made in the Windows 10 graphics subsystem. As you're all aware, you've probably been hearing throughout the day that we've been making big changes in things like performance and new features and all these different things across Windows 10. Display and graphics are certainly no difference, and I'm looking forward to showing off some of the really cool stuff that we have for you. So in this session, I'm really going to share with you all at a fairly high level the improvements that we've made in the graphics subsystem across the last couple of years for Windows 10. I'll give you some insight into the steps that we've taken to get to where we are, a little bit of evolution, if you will. Give some highlights onto the new display driver model, as well as DirectX. And we'll get into some of the fun stuff, the real shiny things that are easy to show off, which are demos. I'll have some demo videos that are showing off some of the massive performance improvements that we've made due to the changes in the graphics subsystem. So as you can see here, there's really two parts to the graphics subsystem. There's the Windows Display Driver Model, which is WDDM, and then there's the runtime, which is DirectX. In Windows 7, we started with WDDM 1.1 and DirectX 11. And from there, we started making incremental changes throughout the throughout each operating system release. Windows 7 is 1.1, Windows 8 it was 1.2, and DirectX 11 1.1, and then 1.3, 11.2. DX10, as you can see, this is where we made the major version changes, and we'll get into some of those high-level features, which really show off the reason why this is a major version change for DirectX and the Windows Display Driver Model. There we go. Okay, so in Windows 7, this is where we, or people were really starting to see that there's a lot of processing power on the GPU. And so they decided, so we started to think, what are some of the things that we can actually start to offload onto the graphics processing unit that we don't need to use to do on the CPU? What are some things that we can do in parallel and take advantage of the parallel processors that we have there? And so that's when we came up with things like Direct2D, where text and other 2D type of applications were offloaded onto the graphics processing unit, and that's where you started seeing a lot of performance gains and a lot of animations and things in things such as Internet Explorer. As we get into Windows 8, that's where we started to see things around system on a chip and ARM. That's where we added support for ARM CPUs and ARM GPUs, where we added tile-based rendering to take advantage of the lower power and the rendering that typically comes on ARM-based GPUs. We wanted to make sure that we optimized for battery and for to get the best performance that we can on some of these lower power type devices. When we get into Windows 8.1, we built on some of the things that we had for the tablet side of things, for the system on a chip side of things. We improved we improved on the way that we handled power, the way that we handled things like video. We added 48 hertz for video, so you're not using as much power. You're matching the same resolution from that's coming in from your input as what's going on to your screen. And then we also added some performance improvements around DirectX 9 for the, because SoC has a tendency to fit in the lower end of the DirectX 9 side of things, so we made some improvements in DirectX 9 to really take advantage of those. Now in comes Windows 10. This is where the big changes happens. This is the biggest change in the driver model and in DirectX since 2008, when we introduced WDDM for the first time and DirectX 9. A big focus of Windows 10 is back on high-end gamings, on what we call AAA games. And we really focused on making sure that we had the performance and the robustness and the debuggability in Windows 10 for these types of, for games, for power. We also added some improvements in wireless displays. Although wireless displays was added in Windows 8.1, there were some things that we wanted to improve on there. There was a little, there's the user interfaces were a little bit different from a wireless display as opposed to plugging in, and so we made some improvements on that side of the things too. In Windows 8.1, we did add what we called Microsoft Hybrid. Hybrid is where you've got one GPU on the system, which would be an integrated GPU. And then you would also have a discrete GPU, which would be used more for the performance side of things. So if you were doing something that might require a little more processing power, the operating system, or in before Microsoft introduced Microsoft Hybrid, the graphics driver itself would actually offload some of these things that needed higher performance off onto the discrete GPU. 8.1, we introduced Microsoft Hybrid, and in Windows 10, we made a lot of improvements in that hybrid, especially for our hardware partners. We listened to them, and then we made sure that we got those features implemented. So first, let's talk about the Windows Display Driver model. So many of the gaming improvements that we'll be talking about for Windows 10 require new features from the new display driver model. And what this means is if you're writing a DirectX 12 driver, you'll be writing a WDDM 2.0 using the WDDM 2.0 driver model. One of the most important things here is really the use the huge increase in CPU efficiency for submitting commands to the GPU. This reduces the overhead and provides a huge boost in draw calls per frame. For Windows desktop apps, WDDM 2.0 allows us to give some preference to the foreground app so that apps running in the background aren't going to be stealing resources from the foreground app. And so this can be controlled by both the developer or the operating system, depending on what the that application might be. We now have more flexibility and support for linked display adapters. And this is, again, this is all about the high-end gaming. This is where you might get a gaming configuration that might have two GPUs in them. In the past, all of this was controlled by IHVs, where they would link the two GPUs, and they would really, they would work together to get the highest performance that you can on a high-end game, or also things like CAD operations. And so we added that flexibility into the operating system. We've also added things like hardware decode of H.264. We use these for the game DVR, the new game DVR feature, and we've also, that's part of the new Miracast implementation that we've had, where we use hardware decode of H.264. In addition, we've also added video out support for discrete GPUs on the hybrid. When we introduced Microsoft Hybrid, there was a technical limitation for Microsoft Hybrid, which meant since you have an external connection for displays on your laptop, with Microsoft, with the Microsoft implementation, you weren't actually able to plug an external monitor and that be dedicated to the discrete GPU. In Windows 10, we've actually made that possible using a few features that we'll actually be talking about here just in the next couple of slides. And these are exciting things because one of the biggest pieces of feedback that we've received from our hardware partners around Microsoft Hybrid is that I want to be able to use the external or the discrete GPU on my laptop to do, you know, to just do my gaming or to just do these other high performance types of things. And so adding that back is a huge deal for our OEM partners and our hardware partners. So some of the improvements is all around display and the way we project or the way that we clone or in things like meeting rooms and whatnot. So we've moved from what we call a physical mode change, which is done by the IHV drivers, to what we call a virtual mode change, which is now done by the desktop Windows manager. And this means that that a call to do a mode set function, such as an SDC, doesn't result in a physical mode change now, but the DWM will actually use the existing buffer that's there to just do a quick resolution change. And so what that means now is whether it's a laptop or a desktop scenario in a multimon, or if you're doing a clone mode, if you plug in a new display, if it has a different resolution, it will automatically make the adjustment of the resolution on the secondary panel. Your internal panel will no longer change. It will only happen on the external panel. It will be a quick flash. It'll make the DPI and the resolution changes. And it doesn't require any log off or log on. In the past, what we've always noticed is it does take some time, depending on how many different monitors. But if you have three monitors, for example, and all you want to do is move one monitor over to another side, as soon as you hit submit or change, all three of the monitors will go black, the resolutions will come back, and it'll be a couple of seconds later. Now, if you plug in however many monitors there is, or if you move one monitor or another monitor, it's only that monitor that has changed that you'll see a mode change in there, which is really nice. The first time I saw that, it was very obvious to me, especially us at Microsoft, who are installing new operating systems almost daily. As soon as you do a mode set and it's that fast, it's very impressive. It's pretty cool. In the case of clone mode, in the past in Windows 8 and 8.1, clone mode were usually typically for, you know, productivity. If you go into a conference room, for example, and you plug in an external projector or television or something like that, what would end up happening is we'd do some quick comparisons. We would see what is the lowest common resolution, and then we would set both the external display and the internal display to that lowest common resolution. And what that could mean is you would have perhaps letterbox or black bars on both the top and bottom for either your internal display or for your external display, or even in some cases both. What we do now in the case of Clone using virtual modes is as soon as you plug in that device, it sees what that device is. It will take the existing the desktop Windows Manager will take the existing buffer with the existing resolution and scale it to the external monitor. So now nothing changes on your internal monitor or on your laptop monitor. It all happens on the external. You may still see a black bar on the external monitor, but nothing changes on the internal. If you want the external to go to its native resolution and its native DPI, you would end up going into an extended mode as opposed to using a clone mode. Miracast. It's about time that we had some wireless projection that's working. And so when we added Miracast support in Windows 8.1, most of that work was done actually in the IHV driver. They would do the comparisons. They would do the mode sets and everything. In Windows 10, we've basically taken all of that functionality that we were asking the IHV to do just because that they already had that functionality there, and we moved that into the operating system. Without doing that, you could notice easily between one IHV to another IHV, you would see two completely different types of outcome when connecting to a wireless display. Now, with Windows 10, all of that functionality has been moved into the operating system, and no matter which piece of hardware, as long as you're running a driver that's a WDDM 2.0 driver, you'll see that it's a consistent experience across there, which means it's more robust, it's more reliable. In addition, in Windows 8.1, when we were when you would have to connect to one of the wireless displays, you would have to go through the device's connection. It wasn't the same as just plugging in a hardware monitor. Now, all of that has been moved into the charms bar, which is on the right-hand side, and you just say connect to a monitor as if it was the same thing as plugging into a monitor. Or what we're used to from a hardware plugin is using the Windows key plus P. It'll bring that same charms bar out. You say connect to whichever display is available. It connects, it makes the pairing, and then you're automatically in clone mode. It's a much simpler solution now, and IHV no longer have to handle most of that functionality, and there's really no difference, but the IHVs do appreciate that much less messing around in code on a, you know, depending on which sync device that you're connecting to or whatnot. So we know, in addition, we also now have a separate hardware channel for a hardware accelerated cursor. Again, this is yet another thing for performance. We were using software cursors before. If the cursor moves on the screen, the entire screen has to get painted. With a hardware cursor, all that's getting repainted is just the cursor that's moving around. So you don't suffer any frames per second change or any latency because of just your cursor moving around on the screen. With dynamic resolution, frame rate resolution changes are much faster. All this really means that there's better performance that's easily visible to the customer, and it makes the Miracast stack much more robust. In the case of docking stations, we've also implemented UIBC, or User Input Back Channel. What's really nice about this is that you're not using any of the Wi-Fi stack or any of the Wi-Fi bandwidth for things like your mouse and keyboard when you're connected to a dock. You're going through the UIBC. There is a session, I think it's, I don't know if the time is correct anymore. I think the time may have gotten changed. But the session, creating great docking station solutions, Kurt Hunter will be giving that one. And it'll give you a lot more depth into the way that we're thinking and the changes that we've made around the entire docking solution that we have. As I mentioned about hybrid, with the introduction of MS Hybrid in 8.1, there was a limitation of the connections to the discrete display. Users were not able to connect directly to that discrete GPU on the external connection. This is done using what is called DWM clone mode. And the virtual mode. So with DWM clone, it's all done with the existing buffers. And now we're able to actually take that buffer and pass it across the bus to whichever device is there. Whether it be a hybrid or an all-in-one, in the case of an all-in-one, you're always required to have what's considered an internal panel. Now, because it's because of the DWM clone, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many different connections you have in there, how many different GPUs you have on the device. You can connect to each one of those, and you could be presenting the exact same thing on every single screen, which was never possible for until we actually introduced DWM clone and the virtual modes. With the introduction of hardware DRM, or dynamic rights management, we really open up the PC to what we're seeing a lot more of, which is high-definition content that's available out there on the web today with things like Netflix. And we're seeing a ton of new 4K content that's coming down. The thing about that is that if there isn't a hardware solution for that, people like Netflix, they don't allow you to actually play that content because they don't feel like that's a trusted source. So with the introduction of hardware DRM, you can now access all of the new rich content for ultra high definition, 4K definitions, and even 1080p. You will need, in most cases, need to have an updated firmware for the GPU, or in many cases, the newer GPUs that are coming out, they already have this hardware DRM implemented. So talk to your IHVs to make sure that implementation and that they actually do have support for hardware DRM. We don't require that as a certification requirement for WDDM 2.0, but it's certainly highly advised. Game DVR is something that's pretty exciting. It's been in the console world for a very long time. What it does is it makes it really easy to capture some really cool gaming moments. If you're playing your favorite game and you get to a certain point that you want to show off to your friends or something like that, through the Xbox game app, you can automatically just hit some hotkeys, do whatever you want to do, stop it, and because of OneDrive, everything is just pushed up into the cloud if you so choose. You can bring it back down. You can edit it, you can crop it, you can make changes to it, just like you can with any other digital media today. And then you can go share it with your friends and show off. We do see things like tutorials. If there's, someone has a hard time to passing a level or something like that, you can record making it through this level. Upload it, show your friend how to do it, or just, again, show off online. It's very much just like taking a picture, taking a video, any of these things. You just upload it, you crop it, you change it, and then you just hit the share button and then your friends can see. So that was that was the Windows Display driver model. And now we're going to get into DirectX. And DirectX 12 is really, as I've already said, it is some of the biggest, most performant changes that we've ever made in the operating system. So there are two big classes that we're really focused on. Number one is reducing the overall cost to the developer and to the ecosystem or to the operating system. And how we do that is spreading the load across the CPUs and across the GPUs. We already have over 50% of the hardware in the market today. We already have drivers with DirectX 12 and WDDM 2.0 implementations in the field today. We can see over 50% reduction in CPU overhead, and I'm going to show you some really cool numbers to prove that. And of course, that depends on how many CPUs that you have. But if you have four CPUs, you have six, you have eight, it will automatically disperse the workload evenly across those CPUs. In the case of GPUs, where we've already optimized quite a bit for the GPUs, we're also seeing over 20% gains in the GPU efficiency and as a result. Also, one thing that is quite nice about this is all these things that we're doing on the desktop PCs today, which is available on the desktop PCs today, you're going to see these things in the mobile environment and all the way down into Xbox as well. So a few of the key, this is just a few of the key DX12 features we'll talk about here. DirectX 12 is so incredibly robust, and you can use it at a high level, you can use it at a very deep level for very graphically rich games, things like Unreal, Fable, Halo, those types of things, as well as just, you know, your day-to-day games. Just a few of the key features is, one is the reduction in overhead of the state change. And this is due using pipeline state objects. If you're a game developer, if you know a game developer, they know exactly what that is. And what's another thing is the efficient reuse of the rendering command. Sometimes you would have to send off a rendering command and send each time. This time it would be available and you can just use those in bundles. The multi-threading and scalability, which I'm going to show in the next couple of slides, is really some of the big performance gains that we're going to see. You're going to see very near perfect scaling across all of the CPUs. And with flexible and efficient resource binding model, in D3D11, they use these views and we introduce them. We've replaced with descriptors in DX12. The apps is now responsible for hazards and the lifetime management of these things. And then we have the new shader and pipeline state caching. So to get into some of the really fun, shiny, cool stuff, and I hope it will actually work, the embedded video here. I want to show you here, on the left-hand side, this is DirectX 11. You can see that it's already starting off at 32 frames per second, where the right side is starting off at 176 frames per second. It's roughly the same amount of draw calls. And what you'll do as soon as I hit play is you'll notice that the DirectX 11 side will get, as you get further into the scene becomes much more complex. There's a lot more rendering that has to happen in there, and you'll start to see some choppiness. On the right-hand side with DirectX 12, you're going to see frame rates that are almost six times the frame rate of DirectX 11. Like, we're seeing multiples of performance gains, where this is something that was almost impossible to do. This really is what we like to refer to as console-like gaming or programming. So let me show you. I hope. Yes. So notice on the left-hand side, we're starting to get a little bit further down. You're at 15 frames on the on the left side, and you're seeing over 80 frames on the right-hand side. It's getting more difficult to render. It's getting very choppy on the left-hand side, and it's very smooth on the right-hand side. You're still staying at over 30 frames per second with DirectX 12. You're finishing at 4.9 frames per second on the left-hand side. One thing that I want to point out, this is a video that's over 2 months old now on a build that was probably close to 3 months old at the time. Since then, we've made a lot of more improvements, both in the drivers, in DirectX, and in the operating system, and so we're seeing even better numbers than that now. So this is a benchmark called 3D Mark that they added the DirectX 12 for. This next one is actually Fable, and this is a benchmarking tool within that they've added into Fable Legends. Again, the left-hand side is DirectX 11. The right-hand side is DirectX 12. Now, the difference that you're going to see here, you're going to see roughly the same frame rates, but what we're doing here is this is basically a race between DirectX 11 and DirectX 12 to see who can basically render this scene the quickest. And these were both recorded, real-time rendered. So you see it looks about the same right here. Oh, this is what I was afraid of. Uh-oh. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Here, let me... It shouldn't be that choppy. Hold on just a second here. Oh, it's not letting me play it. Let me try one more time. Sorry about this. There we go. Will that work? It's not letting me do it. Have patience. All right, here we go. All right, we're a little bit further into it, but you'll notice that the sun's already gone down on both sides. Watch on the right how quickly the sun starts to come back up and how much faster it's rendered than DirectX 11. I apologize for that. But this is real-time game from Fable, and so it's always nice to see an actual game showing off the rendering capability. You can see the milliseconds up at the top, they're roughly the same, and then when you get to the end, right sides is several seconds ahead, and then DirectX 11 is much slower. So it's pretty, and it's a beautiful scene too. Okay, there we go. Apologize for the technical difficulties. This next one is from our friends at Anontech. They took, again, this is also some fairly old results. We're seeing some even better numbers today. And if you go to Anontech's website, you can read the entire article that they have. But right here, this is comparing DirectX 12 to DirectX 11 again. And the comparison here is based on the amount of cores. But you're seeing it with DirectX 11, let's just pick the red with 6 cores, you're getting about 29 frames per second. When you go to DirectX 12, you're getting all the way up to 60, almost 67 frames per second. And this was used using the StarSwarm benchmark. So this one was done on a GeForce GTX 980. This next one was on an AMD Radeon R9. And they also show the Mantle results in there as well. Oh no, this one's just showing the cores. So again, you're seeing with DirectX 12, 8.39 frames per second, all the way up to 41, 42, 43. And then the top number is actually a misprint. That is AMD's Mantle. So that shows the numbers on AMD. So this is comparing DirectX 11, DirectX 12, and the very top one is actually Mantle. I apologize. This one here is actually showing the time in milliseconds for batch submissions. So this is just showing some really crazy numbers. For the red is D3D11, black is D3D12, and then for the AMD parts, it shows you Mantle. But just look at the amazing difference that you're seeing in the numbers. You're going from down on the GeForce GTX 680 on the lower cost side, you're seeing 33 all the way down to 36. The lower number is obviously better. And the same thing when you're seeing the lower end, 117 all the way down to 7.8 and 10.8. At the time when Anantech did these articles, the Intel drivers weren't available to them, so they didn't have any of the numbers to compare. So, but what we did have is we had this Asteroids demo that was available at the time, and so we showed the numbers here. As soon as you hit the power, the CPU, it was for DirectX 12. As soon as you started hitting DirectX 12, you can see the huge drop in the CPU usage that they are doing. And this is on an integrated Intel GPU. It was just 2 weeks ago at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco where they really showed off a lot of this DirectX 12 features. We had a lot of game folks on there. We had all of our IHVs. And we actually have our close IHVs, NVIDIA, Intel, and AMD. They'll have sessions today, and they'll go into much more depth around DirectX 12 than I am today. They definitely are the experts, much more so than I am when it comes to DirectX 12. So GPU hardware that's supported today, these are our desktop partners. We already, as I said, we already have over 50%. It's probably closer to the 60% side of existing hardware today. And we actually have drivers on Windows Update that you can download that are WDDM and DX12 capable. A lot of our desktop hardware. In addition, we're working very closely with Qualcomm to develop their WDDM 2.0 and DX drivers. And we've just recently, over the past year or so, started working with ARM Holdings on their Mali GPU. And they're doing excellent. They're making excellent progress. We've already seen we're able to run a lot of the benchmarks. We're able to do a lot of things. We can run the hardware lab kit on these things. And so having ARM Holdings be able to have their Mali GPU do this, it just shows that we can really run across a very, very wide set of hardware that can go out to almost any device. As far as software content, you can see we've got tons and tons of games that are coming out. IHVs are very excited about the progress that we've seen, especially when you show numbers like that on pre-release drivers and pre-release operating systems. We've got UE4, Fable Legends, Nitrous Games. Unity has already ported their engine now, and they showed that off at the January Tech Preview as well as the Game Developers Conference last week or a couple weeks ago. Future Mark Farandole, Star Swarm shows the games. That's the non-tech article that we showed. And we have over 100 studios engaged with us today to release DirectX 12 content. So, testing and tools. We have content in the hardware logo kit today. What we advise you to do is grab the latest drivers that are available on Windows Update today. Use the hardware logo kit, the hardware lab kit, and do some testing on that. But all that being said, nothing really beats real life user scenarios. And so what that means is, you know, take games, try the latest games, try the high end games, try the low end games. Take pictures, do all types of different monitor connections, and test the DPI scaling. File bugs if you can. Send feedback using the feedback tool. And there will be an OEM testing guidance document that will be coming out to on MSDN. It's available today. Internally at Microsoft, and we expect it to be released to the public here within the next month or so. From a game perspective, our advice is to use the DX12 content that's available today. You can go to the Windows or the DirectX12 blog and find that content. Leverage these benchmarks and other benchmarks that will be coming online. And ensure that any games that you have or that you're or that you may be bundling or whatnot with systems that you may be building or anything like that, that you're starting to use these DirectX 12 engines. So really the ask here is to, first off, familiarize yourself with DirectX 12. At the end, I've got a lot of links that will show you these things. Make sure that you're testing with the pre-release drivers that we have. If you have any custom driver packages or anything like that, make sure that you're or any add-ons or what have you, make sure that you're testing exactly the way that you plan on shipping, whether it's with a game or whether it's without a game or with custom peripherals. With the Xbox peripherals coming down to the PC, you know, think about bundling those things as a gaming device and the fact. And with some of the exciting announcements that we've made for player versus player and, you know, PC versus console. And make sure that you're using a variety of different hardware, that not just one piece of hardware. The difference is, although, you know, with DirectX 12, we're giving you that console-like experience that you have, but PCs aren't consoles because they do come with a huge variety of different hardware. And so when you add that different hardware and that diversity, it's pretty easy to miss some different things and different code paths. We have quite a few related sessions. There's going to be the ultra high definition session by our colleague Nashant Langamnini, who will be, I believe, in this same room tomorrow around 1 o'clock. NVIDIA has a session around the new GPU features, and they'll talk more about DirectX 12. AMD, that's their DirectX 12, a new meaning of efficiency and performance. Designing great 2-in-1 devices is our partner Intel. And then don't forget to visit the labs and get familiar with the hardware lab kit. This is going to be our kit moving forward. We will have more and more content for graphics, both for the driver model and for DirectX, coming online over the next month or so. These are some additional resources. The DirectX 12 blog is fantastic as they're updating these things. There's My teammates just across the hall are constantly answering questions that come in. And the GDC sessions, which is the game developer conference that I talked about that was in San Francisco, this has, I think we had over 13 recordings or something that are up on this site today. About seven of them are focused, maybe not seven, six or so, are focused directly on DirectX. Others are around, you know, console and whatnot. So, yeah, these are some fantastic resources to get even deeper information than what I could have shared with you today. With that, that's what I have. Please don't forget to complete your evaluation. We've got, you know, this is our first time in Shenzhen for WinHack. This is my first time presenting this content to you. We'd really love to know what more you might want to know about, any additional information, anything that we could have done better. And, you know, we'll take any compliments you can give us as well. Thank you very much. I hope you guys have a great WinHack.